I'm Greg Jarrett, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, January 22nd, 2019. I'm Dave Anthony. What BuzzFeed reported about President Trump generated a lot of impeachment buzz.
Look, the president could well have committed criminal offenses. I don't know. He could well be indicted or impeached. But you have to wait for the evidence.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. It's only the beginning of 2019, but a lot of Democrats already say they want to be president in 2020.
I mean, certainly the last 2 years, you've seen more women get involved in politics, not even just running at all levels, but also just activism-wise, volunteering.
And I'm Christian Wyden. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
BuzzFeed is standing by its story. It got a lot of media attention last week, citing law enforcement sources who've seen documents and text messages reporting President Trump directed his now ex-lawyer Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about his business dealings in Russia. The president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, told NBC's Meet the Press.
To their credit, the Justice Department and the special counsel's office said that the story was inaccurate. And the inaccuracy is that there's no evidence that the president told him to lie.
Giuliani does say that the president was involved in trying to build a Trump Tower in Moscow through the 2016 campaign.
Probably up to, could be up to as far as October, November. Our answers cover until the election. So anytime during that period, they could have talked about it. But the president's recollection of it is that the thing had petered out quite a bit.
The BuzzFeed report did generate a lot of talk if the president suborned perjury, potentially obstructing justice.
Frankly, I was a tad skeptical in that the minute the report reached the press, there was a spontaneous explosion of predictions of imminent prosecution and impeachment.
Jonathan Turley is a Fox News contributor and law professor at George Washington University.
We've seen this happen before, bombshell stories and then this feeding frenzy. What was notable about the article is it really didn't contain any evidence and there was no cooperation from other media outlets. And it doesn't mean that all of the story is untrue. In fact, I think some of it's likely to be true. Michael Cohen is going to testify in Congress, and I think he's going to try to bag the president. I think he's going to incriminate the president in his own testimony with illegal campaign finances, or what he says are illegal. And he may indeed go beyond that. But the story itself was notable in what it did not contain, which was independent and corroborated evidence.
Now, they cite law enforcement sources close to an investigation. They don't say necessarily that they are from the special counsel's office. And the special counsel came out with a statement that BuzzFeed's description of specific statements and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. Were you surprised to see any statement at all from the special counsel? They're usually tight-lipped.
I was very surprised. This is the first time they've ever done this. There's other stories that didn't pan out, but on this occasion, they decided to make their first public rebuttal. The story itself clearly seemed to suggest that these leaks came from people associated with Robert Mueller's investigation. The only other investigations that have happened were the pre-Mueller investigation at Justice Department, the Southern District of New York investigation, which is the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the congressional investigation. If these sources came from Congress with their investigators, it would, in my view, be very problematic in how they described the source of their evidence. What concerned me is that I just testified in the confirmation hearing of William Barr, and he was unfairly criticized for what the media said was speculation as to the use of an obstruction claim against the president. There was nothing particularly speculative about it. It's one of the most commonly discussed theories. And yet, the media was all over Barr. And by the end of the week, however, the media was doing wild speculations about this story. And I think it does put into sharp relief the problem that many of us have talked about, which is the willingness to believe anything negative about the president and the unwillingness to accept anything that might be positive.
All right, let me play you something from the Barr confirmation hearing last week that got a lot of attention after the story started to circulate. This was a line of questioning from the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican Lindsey Graham, to the attorney general nominee.
So if there was some reason to believe that the president tried to coach somebody not to testify or testify falsely, that could be obstruction of justice.
Yes, under that. Yeah, under an obstruction statute, right. Yeah.
So if there's some evidence that the president tried to conceal evidence, that would be obstruction of justice potentially, right? Right.
So what do you make of that? Do you agree with William Barr?
Oh, I do agree with him. I testified in favor of his confirmation because I've known him for years. He's an honorable and, in my view, brilliant lawyer. His memo was a good faith, comprehensive discussion of this issue. But what concerned me and what I told the Senate was that he was being so unfairly portrayed in his memo. His memo said that he believed the president could be charged for conduct in office. A president could commit obstruction, could also commit subornation. So all of this nonsense about Barr saying a president is above the law was refuted in his memo, was refuted in his testimony. But that's not being reported.
Yeah, and the memo came out. He wrote this memo before he was even considered for the attorney general job. And Democrats want him to recuse himself like Jeff Sessions had done if Barr becomes the attorney general. Do you think that's a bad idea?
I see no reason why Bill Barr should recuse himself for talking about a legal issue that many of us have discussed. From the civil liberties side, I've objected for almost 2 years to the expansion of crimes like obstruction by those who want to indict the president. Look, the president could well have committed criminal offenses. I don't know. He could well be indicted or impeached. But you have to wait for the evidence, and you don't need to stretch crimes to fit what evidence you have. There's a danger to expanding the obstruction crime. You don't want it to be so broad that it could fit any action or any statement. But in this age of rage, people seem to be unconcerned about how they may change federal law just so they could try to build a case against the president.
Michael Cohen will return to Capitol Hill February 7th to testify before the House Oversight Committee as Democrats step up their own investigation into President Trump and what happened in 2016. But this BuzzFeed report rekindling talk of possible obstruction of justice as Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff wanting Cohen to also appear before the Intelligence Committee that he chairs. Fellow Democrat Eric Swalwell is also on that committee and told the Fox News Rundown podcast earlier this month.
I hope we have that John Dean-like Watergate moment where Michael Cohen can testify publicly and really just put a clear picture out there for the American people as to what was going on during the campaign.
A big question. Will Cohen, who got 3 years in prison, tell lawmakers that BuzzFeed is right? The president did direct him to lie to Congress in the past.
Well, if he does, it would be a departure from his past statements. In the past, Cohen has said that he tailored his testimony so that it was in conformity with what the president said. That's not good. It's also not good if the president understood that he was going to make false statements. But that's not subornation on its face. So he could certainly change his public account, and then we'd have to look seriously at what that suggests about the president's own conduct. But subornation is knowingly encouraging someone to lie, and they're then lying under oath. We're still a fair distance from that in terms of the facts we know.
Obviously, the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has said you can't trust Michael Cohen. If you believe him, he said this in reaction to the BuzzFeed story. If you believe Cohen, he's got a good deal on the Brooklyn Bridge. How damaged is Cohen as someone who's already admitted and is going to go to prison in March for lying to Congress and for the campaign finance violations he claims to have gone forward with?
Well, I'm one of Cohen's long-standing critics. Over a year and a half ago or so, I encouraged the president to sever Michael Cohen as counsel because he had a dreadful reputation. This was before any of this came out. But I wrote a column saying that this is someone that could cause a serious problem for this administration. And the president didn't do that. Instead, he pulled Cohen closer. Now, Cohen is a serial liar and a serial felon. I think he got off way too lightly on his sentence. He should be serving twice as long as he'll serve. But by the way, that doesn't get off the president. I mean, even without a crime, the president was the one who hired this guy. The president has a habit of hiring really some pretty seedy people like Paul Manafort and Michael Cohen. These are people that had terrible reputation. So even if there's not a crime here, the president and his lawyers need to recognize that they didn't force the president to hire them. He hired these people.
Do you ultimately believe impeachment's coming?
I don't. I don't think there's a strong basis right now. I was the last lead counsel in the impeachment trial in the Senate. That was the Porteous trial. You need some pretty strong evidence to move against a president. Will we see that in the Mueller report? I don't know. All I can say is what we know now does not make for a very strong impeachment case.
Professor Jonathan Turley, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
This is Christian Whiten with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
It's only 3 weeks into 2019, and the Democratic field is already looking very crowded. Kind of like how the Republican field looked back in 2015, only earlier. 8 people have already said they're running. Former San Antonio mayor and HUD cabinet member under President Obama, Julian Castro. Former Maryland Congressman John Delaney, military vet and former West Virginia State Senator Richard Ojeda, and former tech executive Andrew Yang. The other 4 are women, including 3 senators. Kristen Gillibrand of New York.
I'm filing an exploratory committee for President of the United States tonight.
California Senator Kamala Harris announced she's running yesterday.
It's going to be about talking with people about the fact that right now we have an administration that has waged a full-on assault on American values and American ideals. It is going to be about speaking truth, especially when there has been so much that is contrary to truth.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren did a live Instagram video after her announcement.
I'm glad for everybody who's joining this video. It's great to hear from you. Hold on a sec. I'm going to get me a beer.
And Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Now, there are several more names orbiting the decision, names you've likely heard. Former Vice President Joe Biden, Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, and former Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper. All of this political activity is starting to heat things up in the state that elects nominees first, Iowa.
I was just traveling a couple days ago, and I explained to somebody that in Iowa, and especially in Iowa City, which is a college town, it's not unusual for the average sixth grader to meet every presidential candidate of major political parties before the rest of the nation even knows who they are.
Brian Kerschling's an eye doctor at the VA in Iowa City. He did some volunteer work on President Obama's first campaign.
So it starts pretty early here. My guess is by April or May, the phone calls will probably start.
The phone calls being what, that your cell phone or your home phone will start ringing with candidates saying, hey, I'd like your vote?
Both, yes. Basically, the folks who are vying for the Iowa caucus, which will be probably next January or February, a year from now, my guess is they'll be asking for folks to volunteer with their campaigns, and they'll be asking for folks to contribute money and so on and so forth, probably in the next few months, I would think.
How long have you lived in Iowa? Like, how many campaigns have you seen go through?
I've worked a number of them. I grew up in Iowa. I've been here pretty much since 1977. We take our involvement in the national political scene pretty seriously. Iowans have a, you can't print this, but a strong sniffer for bullshit. Deeds and track record are valued more than words and platitudes.
Mm-hmm.
We're an interesting state. We're kind of purple right now. You know, remember, this is the state that that launched Obama.
Sure.
In, you know, 10 years ago, actually more 12 years ago. But it's also a state that went for Trump. So, and has Steve King as a representative. So, you know, we're an interesting group.
Brian, tell me, does this time around feel different than previous elections? Does it feel even more than previous elections already? Or is this similar to maybe, 2016 or really 2015 when the Republican field started to get very crowded very quickly?
I think there's great interest. I think there's a lot of people that are frustrated with the politics on the national scene. I think there's people that are very frustrated with there's folks that I know that voted for Donald Trump that are disgusted. And they, I think in general, again, Iowans, I think, would like to see our leaders try and have some sense of decorum and not emulate children. So I, the number one thing I hear is I wish he'd just put his damn Twitter account away.
At this stage, does it seem like there is even more lawn signs, even more sort of activity at an earlier stage? Or does this seem like it was like 3 years ago?
I'd say that question will be better once we're thawed out. It's like 16 degrees and -3 wind chill, so there's no lawn signs yet. But but I do think that I think there's people that sat out the election in 2016 that are absolutely motivated to get out there and get involved now. I think there's more of a, if you want things done, you got to do it yourself. You got to get involved. And I'm encouraged by that. I'm enthused by that.
Now, until things really get going on the ground, we wait for even more candidates to announce they're running. And we wait to see if, just like the midterms, 2020 becomes even more female-focused. Anna Palmer is a senior Washington correspondent for Politico, co-author of Politico's Playbook, and host of Politico's Women Rule podcast.
Well, I think certainly when you look at history, right, Hillary Clinton was the first woman to run for president, was taken very seriously. Now you have a whole crop of women who are being taken seriously in their bid for president and, you know, potentially looking for the other men that are in the race as a potential running mate.
Speaking of Hillary Clinton, do you think she'll jump back into this for third time's a charm?
Well, I mean, I think there's always a lot of speculation, certainly about that. But she's not somebody who, I think, where you look at where the Democratic Party is, where there's a lot of enthusiasm about another potential run.
Yeah. How much, though, did Hillary Clinton's fight with President Trump motivate women this time around? Or was it the things that then candidate Trump said on the campaign trail about women generally that motivated this crop?
I mean, certainly in the last 2 years, you've seen more women get involved in politics, not even just running at all levels, but also just activism-wise, volunteering. And I think a lot of people mark that to the 2016 cycle and President Trump and some of the things that he did say on the campaign trail and what some of the policies are. But certainly, I think if you look at the women that are in the race already saying that, I mean, that he is a big motivating factor, why they feel like their time is now, why they need to be running.
Is this field going to be possibly the most crowded we've ever seen? I mean, even maybe more than where the Republicans were 3 years ago?
I mean, I think where the Republicans were 3 years ago, that was a very crowded field. And you had a lot of, you know, real superstars. I was in Iowa and in New Hampshire covering on the ground. And you had all kinds of, you know, lots of senators and lots of other folks running on the Republican side. This is going to be, I think, probably a lot like that.
Yeah, I was talking to someone earlier who said that this already feels like the Democrats are just throwing everyone to the wall to see what sticks, much like, you know, 3 years ago with Republicans because of the crowdedness already. And this person said that there were really only like one or two viable candidates. And my question was, well, wait a second. No one thought then candidate Donald Trump was viable, and look what happened. Is that sort of what's happening here? Like, at some point, are we also going to see people outside of politics maybe start announcing?
Yeah, I mean, I think look at Barack Obama. No one thought he really had a shot when he first put his name in. You know, Donald Trump certainly paved the way for an untraditional candidate to say, hey, like, if I can catch fire, I can, you know, potentially be the next nominee.
The crowded field of it is motivated by President Trump, right? And how he is, right? I mean, you were just saying earlier, Clinton maybe isn't where the Democratic Party is anymore. Where is the party? I mean, I think we all see that how they're reacting. Is this all a reaction to President Trump, or is there something else going on here?
I think whenever there's not somebody from that party in the White House, there's always a bigger field, right? I think there's a lot of people when they have something to run against, whether it was this president or any president. I think that's why you probably saw Republicans having such a crowded field 3 years ago. But I do think this is emblematic of the larger debate within the Democratic Party, where you have establishment Democrats much more in the Clinton wing of the party, and you have on the other side much more of the progressives, the Bernie Sanders side of the party. And that fight was born out in the 2016 primary, but it was never really settled. And so I think this is just a larger manifestation of that kind of friction that is continuing to happen within the Democratic Party.
I think what'll be really fascinating, and I'm wondering what people of your ilk think, like people who run in political circles and talk about this stuff all day, is will a Republican challenge President Trump from within the party? What's your read on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that you go to cocktail parties in Washington and people like to talk about. But yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be a big question of whether or not that is viable. There are certainly establishment Republicans and Republicans who've left the party because they don't think that it, you know, represents the Republican Party that they grew up in, that are very frustrated by this president and frustrated not just by him, but by kind of some of the policies that are going that are being put forward. And so I definitely think there could be a John Kasich, for example, of Ohio or somebody like that
yeah.
who could try to put their hand up and say, hey, here's an alternative. I think it's very unlikely that someone like that could be very successful.
If Trump was brutal toward Republicans 2 years ago with the nicknames and the, you know, just the comments, I imagine it's going to be even more, brutal with a field full of Democrats, right? I mean, what does the Democratic Party have to do here?
I think that the president certainly, you see him not only just on the campaign trail, but certainly in Washington regarding the shutdown. You know, he does not hold back when it comes to Twitter and how he attacks, I think, oftentimes very effectively with his base, his opponents. So it's going to be more of the same.
So finally, I know that you don't have a crystal ball, but I have to ask, who do you think will win this nomination if you had to bet right now?
You know, I always say after the 2016 election, reporters should really get out of the prediction business. So I'm going to punt on that one. I just think right now, the thing to think about and the way I think about it is just like Donald Trump was kind of laughed about early on in this, you know, 3 years ago, there could be an emerging star or emerging, you know, candidate on the Democratic side that nobody is really watching. I just think there's twists and turns in terms of campaigns and cycles and what catches on fire and what is the political issue of the day, that it's very hard this far out to really forecast anything.
Yeah. Anna Palmer, thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thanks.
Download and make it Hammer Time with Bill Hemmer.
I said, what'd you give up for Lent?
Then I said, booze.
Uh-huh.
And then you said, no wonder you look so miserable.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Christian Whiten.
What's on your mind?
The now famous Gillette ad scolding men for toxic masculinity, the flavor of the month cause among the politically correct, isn't just a regrettable advertising choice that has backfired magnificently. It's another sign of the politicization of everything in our culture and of left-leaning public relations professionals playing fast and loose with their employers' reputations and profitability. What does suggesting men are guilty by association with bullying, sexual stereotyping, and objectifying females have to do with selling razors? Nothing, of course. But it's part of a trend at Gillette parent company Procter & Gamble, which sells consumer brands like Cascade, Tide, and Crest. Procter & Gamble isn't alone in the corporate world in flirting with progressive cultural causes. In 2018, Delta Airlines jumped into the political fray over a gun control issue by ostentatiously canceling a seldom-used discount for members of the National Rifle Association. The move sparked calls for a boycott. In 2015, Starbucks decided to encourage baristas to engage customers in discussions about race. The campaign wasn't popular and didn't last long. Last year, Nike embraced former National Football League player Colin Kaepernick, who became famous by disrespecting America by taking a knee during the national anthem. He started a trend that badly degraded the league in the eyes of many Americans and led to a steep ratings decline for games. Notably, the PR professionals behind these moves did not have what companies call P&L responsibility, meaning that they are not on the hook for the profitability of a business division as reflected in its profit and loss statement. What's strange is that those who do have P&L responsibility do not rein them in. Managers should take a stand against advertising that alienates large swaths of the public. This should be a particularly obvious choice since there's no real upside to playing with politicized matters. It's one thing if a government policy is going to impact a business and that business feels compelled to comment publicly or lobby the government. But that hasn't been the case with any of these corporations' dalliances with the progressive cultural issues. It's somewhat understandable that executives don't want to say no to these regrettable PR instincts. After all, who wants to be labeled as insensitive or even just conservative at a time when perpetually outraged progressives are on a rampage across our culture? Nevertheless, managers have an obligation to do what is best for their business, and there is a clear fiduciary responsibility to do so in the case of a public corporation like Procter & Gamble. We should also lament the continued politicization of everything in American life and resolve to keep politics in its place. PR and advertising should be about understanding and attracting consumers, not lecturing them. I'm Christian Whiten.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.